And now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and a very warm welcome to Shout Out. I'm Andy Shilton.
And I'm Lisa Loader. Today on the show we're going to explore The Other Side.
That's the translation of D'Autre Côté, which is the new album from Laura Cahan.
And we're also going to explore Pink Triangle.
It is here with Queer Street, looking back at the Holocaust and what happened to LGBT plus people.
All today?
Right here on Shout Out.
LGBT History Month with BCFM. Brenda Howard. Howard, a qualified nurse, was born in New York in 1946 and throughout the 1960s was an anti-Vietnam War activist. Howard became active in LGBT and feminist politics, although found herself a minority in both spaces as a bisexual woman. As a member of the Gay Liberation Front, Howard organised a commemorative rally 1 month after the Stonewall Riot of 1969. The rally helped inspire the Christopher Street, where the Stonewall Inn is located, Liberation March on the first anniversary of the Stonewall Riot, which Howard also arranged. The rally became an annual event, spreading to other cities within the US and across the world. Howard, along with fellow activists, is credited with popularising the word pride to describe these events. LGBT History Month with BCFM.
No, I think Lisa was reading.
I'm focused now.
Back in the room.
I love how seriously you take it. It's so sweet.
I'm very serious as well.
No, you're not. You're never serious.
Never.
No. You just like off mic goes off. Up, mouth opens, off you go.
You don't talk about yourself so derogatory, Andy. You do a great job. I'm just trying to keep up with you.
I'm just trying to sound more chill, more chill. Cool.
Yeah.
Shout out.
You sound chill and cool. You're Canadian.
All right. That's awesome.
Yeah, you're about to become a state, aren't you? Apparently.
Oh. Oh,
no. Sorry.
Nothing.
Shouldn't have brought the conversation
we
up,
can't,
should
we can't
I?
Talk about that.
Why are you opposed? I'm quite excited about it.
It's just embarrassing on an international scale at the moment. We're going to run Gaza, we're going to buy Greenland, we'll invade Canada and take over Panama.
We're going to own the Gaza Strip. It's just got to be one of the worst things anybody's ever said anywhere. Of all time.
He wants it to be a US Riviera, doesn't he? That was the weirdest thing ever. On a serious note, the UN has said it's going to take about 27 years, they reckon, to sort out the mess in Gaza because the amount of, you know,
infrastructure that's gone,
infrastructure and concrete and everything. So as much as we're laughing, it's going to take a lot of effort to sort that out.
I mean, after the Second World War, because, I mean, at the end, through the fault of the Nazis, Germany was bombed flat.
Yeah,
most of its cities were in terrible ruins, and it took a lot of investment and a lot of work to rebuild them.
Yes, Berlin actually has an underground city.
It was such
a big target that the Nazis actually built underneath. And it was discovered more recently than you think. It was about 20 years ago or so. They discovered all the big, and it's literally like an underground city.
Yeah.
That's just been abandoned since the war. So find out a lot more about the war later, because Ez has done a really nice Queer Street on the Pink Triangles, who were, of course, the gay men that were persecuted. Where the Jews got the yellow triangle,
you have both,
gay men got the pink triangle. Oh, yes.
Yeah, the black triangles. And there were others. Green for common criminals. There was black for disabled people. Brown for gypsy people.
And lesbians.
Lesbians in the game with the black triangle as well. Yeah, that's absolutely right. And up until the 80s, you could sort of buy pink triangles and black triangles and other colours from sort of left-wing bookstores and so on, you know, as a symbol of resistance.
Yeah.
red triangles for communists, violet triangles for Jehovah's Witnesses, things like that.
Yeah horrible categorization.
They were if nothing else, efficient. You know what they did? They kept records, which of course they tried to destroy at the end of the war.
Yeah. Anyway, we got a feature on that coming up a little bit later.
Be fascinating.
In the show,
yeah. So. Looking forward to that.
But before we do that, I'm polishing off my French here. D'autre côté, I believe is how you pronounce it, which means.
D'autre côté.
You got it in your script.
Yeah, but I don't know. Oh. You'd say it. Just say it. I'm afraid I'm going to get it wrong.
D'autre côté, which means the other side.
Okay.
Apparently.
Okay.
Is Laura Kahn's new album. She's coming to the Cube, I think. Steph managed to catch up with her. Listen to this.
I imagined a world not too far from ours, burning from all sides, in which bombs fall continuously, climate crisis is at its peak, and governments are more conservative and oppressive than ever. In this world, two women fall madly in love and must leave the city and search for a place where their love could have a chance to prosper. That's your words, Laura. Laura Kahn, welcome.
Yeah, that's my words.
Welcome to Shoot Out.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. Right, let's go back to when you were a kid growing up with your family. Were you always into music? Were you always sort of learning instruments and how to sing at school?
Yeah, well, my parents are psychiatrists, both of them. So, but they are really, they were really into music. So they listen a lot of music at home. And my two old brothers, were musicians, I mean, professionally. They are much more older than me. And so I grew up with them and with music all the time. And I think I just wanted to do the same as them and copy them. So I learned music myself too. And I started with the piano at four years old. After that, I learned a bit of violin, but my teacher was always absent because he was into a bad relationship and was really emotionally concerned. And so he didn't came at my lessons. So I was very upset, but I quit with violin. After that, I had a big crush with singing, and I understood why music was important to me. I think I had like I don't know if this word exists in English, but in French we say déclic. It's the same word in English, no? Yeah, I mean, I wanted to play more, to learn how to write songs, to become a songwriter myself, so I can live all my life with music, I did what I wanted to do, so that's great.
Absolutely, a dream come true for you then, Laura.
Yeah, exactly.
Mate, you've got a new single out that I think has not been released yet. Fusée, is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, exactly.
You've also got an album out as well, haven't you?
My album called De l'autre côté, which means the other side. And it just came out last Friday. So I was releasing it last weekend was very intense because we did two shows in Paris from the day of the release in Radio France, which is the same kind of radio than the BBC. And so it was, yeah, really huge and intense and terrifying, but was really great. So I'm really happy with it. And yeah, this album is now out in the world.
Our listeners obviously can't see you, Laura, like I can at the moment. Your whole face beams. So when you smile, when your eyes also smile. So I can see how happy you are.
Oh, yeah, this is a really good good note and a problem, because when I'm smiling, my eyes can't stay open. So I have to choose between a see or smile.
I love it. Don't you change it. Don't you change it. It's beautiful. So tell us about how this track came about. Those words I read out before we started the chat. Very powerful. I've watched the video to the single that's about to come out. Absolutely beautiful. Did you have anything to do with the video and the design and the filming?
I asked some people to take care of this video clip, and they asked me if I would be okay to work with AI, and I was a bit afraid about it, but they thought that it could be a good tool to express dreams in a way and make bizarre images, strange one, and this is true that you can use it like something new in a way, but I wanted it to be really like retrofuturistic in a way, and I think it's working. Yes, but so this song is about like a relationship between two women, and one is very quick, is running all the time, wanted to make progress all the time, wanted to build rockets and go in the moon, etc. And the other one is more in like sensitive. She is more quiet, calm, and so there is a contrast between them, and it's a way for me to talk about our world that is divided between the ecologist and the others, you know, in which camp I am. So this is a critical this is not a good word. In a side, the people who want the world to become always and always and always more technologic.
You say that you got inspiration from Joni Mitchell, Big Thief, and Brigitte Fontaine. Tell us a bit about that. Was that for your parents making you listen to Joni Mitchell?
Not really. I think I'm more into Joni Mitchell since I'm a grown-up person. My parents was more into the Beatles and some French artists like Alain Souchon, maybe Anne Sylvestre. I don't know if you know it. And after that, I was really into British pop, rock, and like big bands like Radiohead, Portishead. I fell in love with Joni Mitchell more like when I was 20 or something. So it's my research, not my parents' one.
Okay. It's a perfect person to actually follow and look up to, because Joni Mitchell's got so much talent in the singer-songwriter
field. Oh, yeah, she's special.
She is. But I would say, Laura, that you're absolutely right up there, because the song Fusée and the video that you made is very special, and you should be very proud of what you've just done. Right. Now, you're not alone, are you, in the performance, the live performances around Europe? You've got somebody who's a very special musician.
Yeah, exactly. I'm so happy because we... did the record with so Mike Lindsay and Josephine Stevenson, which is a brilliant composer, arranger, and multi-instrumentalist. And I'm so lucky to have her on stage with me for all this tour. And it's really special. She is really good with all this synths and machines, and we will have no computer on stage, only organic and analog thing, and she's so great. I don't know if you know Josephine, but if not, you have to know her.
The good news is that you're doing a European tour, and part of that is you're coming to the UK, and you're coming to the venue of the Cube in Bristol.
Yeah, and this is great. I'm so happy for doing this tour, because in fact we recorded all this record in Margate in Kent with Mike Lindsay. Don't know if you know him, but he's really great. I love him so much. He is a part of Tongue and Lump with Laura Marling, which who I really love too. It was fun because I'm living between Paris and Dieppe, which is in Normandy, and I can see the sea, and I'm literally in the other side. So this is a part of why this record is called like De l'autre côté, which means the other side. So it's because when I was in my balcony, I can imagine where I will be recording this album, so in the other side of the sea, and I was looking at the studio and I was dreaming about it. And when I was in the studio, I was thinking of my house in the other side. Yes, so it's really exciting and amazing for me playing in England for this reason too.
Right, so
it's so exciting.
And for the future that you can share?
Well, I'm doing this tour in England, in Germany, in France, and maybe we'll go to the States also and Canada, but it's in a way. for now, my big thing is releasing this album and make the world open to listen to it. And so, yeah, this is my work now. But also, what can I say? I went to LA in December and did a lot of thing there, and maybe they will be out in a moment.
Ah, okay. Heard it here first on Shoutout. Right, so people can follow you and keep tabs on where you are in Europe or even the States. What's your social medias?
Yeah, my social medias is my name, so Laura Kaen. If I pronounce it in English, it's Laura. Laura Kaen. So Kaen is like Cohen, but with an A. Yeah,
so C-A-H-A-N, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. That's it. The same in all the social media. I don't have a website for now, but yeah, I have all the socials.
Okay. And I will be rushing out to get my tickets for the Cube in Bristol.
Yeah, come.
And hopefully a lot of our listeners will be there. You take care, and good luck with your future, Laura.
Thank you so much for having me again.
Very welcome. Au revoir.
Au revoir.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
That's the lovely Laura Kahn there. And that's I don't know when that's coming out. Do you know when that's coming out on the top of your head? I know that one's pre-release, isn't it?
It's a pre-release, yeah. It's good coming fizzy. Out any second now.
Oh, right. Ooh.
Yeah. The album exactly. The album is actually out. So that was out not the Friday, just the on video, the Friday before.
Yeah, yeah. And then obviously the video will be up along with that.
The video is on YouTube already.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so that means it's been released. It's been released.
Yes.
Yeah.
The album has, but the single hasn't.
But the single's on YouTube. Therefore,
look, Laura's listening. Behave.
It's been released.
We're so sorry, Laura. So sorry.
It's beautiful. I've listened to it a few
pardon
times.
Pardon moi, Laura.
Excusez-moi. I think it's a really beautiful track, and looking forward to seeing you on tour.
It's dreamy,
haunting.
Isn't it?
It's haunting almost. Yeah. I love
the
it.
The video is absolutely fantastic. Yeah. There's a lot of AI involved, but wow. What a good watch.
Yeah. She's performing in Bristol on the 25th of February, so go online, book some tickets.
Yep,
and we'll see you there.
If you're not in Bristol, she's also performing in London and I think Margate as well.
I think so.
With that, should we find out what else is going on in the world?
All right.
Yeah.
This is Shoutout News. Welcome along.
The organisers of Pride in Cymru, Wales's largest LGBTQIA+ event, have issued a press release to usher in Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender and Plus History Month. They say, "We're delighted to share that we'll be hosting a series of events this February to commemorate LGBT+ History Month. Our project, 40 years on, LGBTQ+ Activism and Life in Wales, will explore the evolution of activism in Wales since the very first Pride protest back in 1985. This project is funded by the National Lottery Heritage Fund with thanks to National Lottery players. Thank you to everyone who came to our project launch event at the Senedd, and thank you to Jeremy Miles, MS, for supporting the event."
One of the network of independent and queer-friendly bookstores in the city of Bristol is moving to new premises this week. Heron Books is moving from the Clifton Arcade to number 7A Regent Street with effect from Saturday. They say from 9:30 we will have sweet treats supplied by East Village Cafe. From 4:45 the champagne corks begin popping. At 5 p.m. we will be toasting Heron Books Volume 2 with a glass of something and a short poetry reading from Bob Walton. For further information, do visit heronbooks.co.uk.
Anti-fascist organisation Hope Not Hate, which is backed by the Trade Union Congress and by the centre-left newspaper The Daily Mirror, says that its most recent polling would be a cause for alarm amongst LGBTQIA+ people, as well as many other groups. In a press release, the organisation says, "If a general election was called tomorrow, Reform UK could win as many as 76 seats, potentially surging to 169 with just a small shift in support." They say, "This is no longer a protest vote or a passing trend. Reform is gaining ground and we need to fight back against their far-right agenda and stop what they call their momentum. And make no mistake, this would be disaster," they said. "Reform UK's leadership scapegoats asylum seekers, Muslims and other minorities. They reject democratic principles, undermine trust in our institutions and champion policies rooted in hate. They're not just growing, they are accelerating." They say, "Our latest polling shows support surging, and behind the scenes they are building a ruthless campaign machine. We need to start organising now before their influence spreads even further. If we don't act now, they could reshape British politics as we know it." Hope Not Hate is appealing for supporters, volunteers and funds from all communities, and notes that the far right has more money than its opponents, but can be defeated when people realise that such groups are the machinery of ultra-wealthy people.
And it's about time that we recognise some of the great community building work being conducted by the bisexual people under the wide rainbow of the LGBTQI+ population. From London comes news that the legendary cruise bar for men, the Central Station in King's Cross, is putting on weekly bisexual fun parties at the venue. In a statement, the organisers explain, "The Bi Fun Club hosts swinging play parties for sexually adventurous adults at the Central Station Bar in King's Cross. We hold daytime parties every Monday from 1:30 to 7:30 p.m. and evening parties on the second and fourth Wednesday of the month from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. At all the parties, we welcome bisexual and bicurious males, females and members of the trans community. To attend, you no longer need to reserve your place. You just turn up and pay on the door.
Sounds fantastic. Now, pagan radio stations have been marking the festival of Imbolc, which in the Christian calendar is known as Candlemas or St. Bride's Day. LGBTQIA plus pagan and New Age groups in particular have been celebrating this festival, which marks the midway point between Yuletide and the spring equinox. In traditional terms, this festival is, according to our friends at the Goddess and Green Man bookstore in Glastonbury, in the Celtic seasonal calendar, marks the beginning of the lambing season and signals the very first signs of spring and the stirrings of new life. It is Brigid Failed, the quickening of the year.
In Liverpool, famous local disc jockey personality and gay hero Peter Price is to return to late night radio, hosting a new slot on the station In Demand Decades Radio. Mr. Price has been involved in radio since the launch of the city's first legal commercial station, Radio City, in 1975, and also worked for BBC Radio Merseyside. Peter has had a rollercoaster ride of a life, and early on, conflicts over his homosexuality led him to seek psychiatric help. In those days, homosexuality was considered a mental disorder, and Mr. Price was given various bizarre cocktails of drugs. His nerves held out, and he quit psychiatric treatment the night before the crazed psychiatrist was due to start giving him electroshock treatment. What's more, sometime later, Mr. Price was in a gay bar and saw the psychiatrist in there. He'd been tortured by another closeted gay man. "It took 10 men to get me off him that night," recalled Mr. Price for BBC Two's It's Not Unusual series in 97. Mr. Price's late-night talk show on Radio City was noted for its bravery and honesty. Mr. Price was praised for abandoning his midweek show on one occasion in February 2004 to go to the aid of a 13-year-old caller who was threatening to end his life. Pete Price said, "I am thrilled to be joining the team at In Demand Decades. The radio business has changed lots over the years, but getting the chance to do local radio in the area I built my career on is a dream. I'm also excited about being back on Sunday nights in the time slot I'm most known for. I can't wait to get started."
Well, that's it for another fascinating week in LGBTQIA plus politics and culture. Remember to check out our website on your travels around the queer web. We are at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
For Shoutout News, this has been Ezra Peregrine
and Terry Starr.
Shoutout News,
national and international LGBT news for you.
For more information about Shoutout Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shoutout,
LGBT radio for you.
LGBT History Month with BCFM 93.2, Marsha P. Johnson. Johnson self-identified in a variety of ways, as gay, as a transvestite, and as a drag queen. Today, Johnson would likely be referred to as gender non-conforming. She's considered to be a central figure in the Stonewall Uprising of 1969, when patrons of the Stonewall Inn, New York, first fought back against police harassment and brutality. The Stonewall riots are considered the most important event that led to the gay liberation movement. In 1972, Johnson helped establish a shelter for gay and trans kids, and in the 1980s was a prominent AIDS activist for ACT UP. Shortly after the 1992 Pride Parade, Johnson's body was discovered floating in the Hudson River. Although initially ruled as a suicide, the New York Police Department reopened the case in 2012 as a possible homicide. LGBT History Month with BCFM 93.2.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Hello and welcome to Queer Story. This episode is focused on the Pink Triangle, and so I shall be talking about the persecution of LGBTQR plus people during the Holocaust. The Holocaust is widely recognised as one of history's most horrific genocides, primarily targeting Jewish people, but also affecting other marginalised groups, including Romani people, disabled individuals, political dissidents, and homosexuals. Gay men in particular were subject to extreme persecution under Nazi rule, facing arrest, imprisonment, forced labour, castration, and execution. Women suspected of lesbianism were also marginalised, though their experiences were often quite different. The Nazis considered homosexuality a threat to their ideology, particularly in relation to their rigid gender norms and population policies. Here I will explore the experiences of LGBTQI+ people during the Holocaust, examining their persecution, the conditions they endured in concentration camps, the medical experiments inflicted upon them, and the lasting impact of their suffering. Before the rise of Adolf Hitler and the Nazi Party, Germany was known for relatively progressive beliefs regarding homosexuality, particularly in cities such as Berlin. The Weimar Republic, 1918 to 1933, saw a flourishing LGBTQI+ culture, with numerous gay bars, clubs, and organisations advocating for homosexual rights. The Scientific Humanitarian Committee, founded by Magnus Hirschfeld in 1897, was one of the first organisations in the world to advocate for gay rights. Hirschfeld's work in sexology challenged contemporary beliefs about homosexuality, prompting the idea that it was a natural variation of human sexuality, rather than a moral failing or disease. Despite this progress, Germany's legal system still contained discriminatory laws. Paragraph 175 of the German Criminal Code, originally enacted in 1871, criminalised male homosexual acts. While enforcement was inconsistent during the Weimar period, the law remained a tool that could be used against gay men. This legal foundation became a key instrument of Nazi prosecution once Hitler came to power in 1933. The Nazi regime viewed homosexuality as a direct threat to its goals. Central to Nazi ideology was a belief in a strong militaristic and fertile reproductive Aryan race. Homosexuality was perceived as undermining these ideals because gay men were seen as failing in their duty to reproduce and contribute to the growth of the German population. The Nazis also associated male homosexuality with weakness and moral corruption, blaming it for the perceived decline of German society. The first transport of homosexuals was in 1933 to Fussbüttel concentration camp. They were marked with the letter A, which was replaced later by the pink triangle. In 1935, the Nazis revised paragraph 175 to expand the definition of criminalised homosexual behaviour. Previously, the law had required proof of sexual acts under the new version. Even suspected or suggestive behaviour, such as flirting, was grounds for arrest. This led to a sharp increase in convictions. By 1938, around 8,000 men were being arrested annually for violating paragraph 175. The Gestapo and the SS actively sought out homosexual men, often using entrapment tactics, informants, and surveillance. Many were arrested simply for being named by others, even without evidence. The Nazis also raided gay bars and organisations, shutting down meeting places and destroying records of homosexual communities. Once arrested, gay men faced harsh penalties, including imprisonment, forced labour, and in many cases deportation to concentration camps. It is estimated that between 10 and 15,000 men were sent to camps for homosexuality, though records are incomplete due to the destruction of evidence and the reluctance of survivors to come forward after the war. Gay prisoners in concentration camps were marked with a pink triangle on their uniforms to distinguish them from other inmates. The symbol, which later became a reclaimed emblem of LGBTQI+ resistance, was initially used to isolate and stigmatise them further. And those branded with the pink triangle often faced additional abuse from both guards and fellow prisoners. Other groups, including political prisoners and criminal offenders, sometimes saw gay men as weak or unworthy of solidarity, further exacerbating their suffering. The treatment of homosexual prisoners was brutal. They were subjected to excessive forced labour, medical experiments, and extreme violence. In Auschwitz and at least two other concentration camps, gay prisoners were frequently used for sadistic experiments, including castration without anaesthesia. Nazi doctors sought to cure homosexuality through hormone injections, surgical procedures, and other inhumane experiments, none of which were based on any scientific understanding of human sexuality at all. Survivors have reported that gay men were often chosen for the most dangerous work, leading to higher mortality rates. Some were beaten to death, while others were starved or worked to exhaustion.
Guards also used sexual violence as a means of humiliation and control, and some gay prisoners were subjected to rape or forced prostitution. The persecution of lesbians under the Nazi regime was more complex. Unlike male homosexuality, lesbianism was not explicitly criminalised under paragraph 175, though some lesbians were targeted under laws against asocial behaviour or political subversion. The Nazis largely viewed lesbians as a lesser threat, believing that women could be re-educated into heterosexuality through forced marriage and childbirth. Despite this, lesbians still faced repression and discrimination. Many lost their jobs, were expelled from social circles, or were arrested on fabricated charges. Some were sent to concentration camps, where they were labelled as asocial and marked with a black triangle. While they may not have faced the same level of targeted brutality as gay men, they still suffered massively under the Nazis' regime of misogyny and homophobia. Before the Nazis came to power, there was a centre of progressive thought on gender and sexuality in Germany. People were allowed a level of gender exploration, and early trans people found limited but significant medical and social support. One of the most important institutions advocating for trans rights was the Institute of Sexual Science, founded by Dr. Magnus Hirschfeld in 1919. This institute provided medical treatment, including early forms of hormone therapy and gender-affirming care, and fought for the legal recognition of trans people. In 1933, shortly after Adolf Hitler rose to power, the Nazis raided and destroyed the institute. Thousands of books, medical records, research papers were all burned in one of the regime's infamous book burnings. This event marked the beginning of systematic persecution against trans people in Germany. With the destruction of the institute, many trans people lost access to medical care, identity documents, and safe spaces. The Nazis promoted a strict binary understanding of gender, tied closely to their ideas about racial purity and reproductive duty. Any deviation from these norms was seen as a threat. Trans people, particularly those who had begun gender transition under Weimar-era medical support, were targeted. The Nazi government revoked legal identity documents that had allowed trans people to live their affirmed gender. Those who had changed their names or gender markers were forced to revert to their assigned sex at birth, exposing them to harassment, unemployment, and arrest, making them incredibly vulnerable. Many trans people, particularly trans women, were arrested under the revised paragraph 175, which criminalised them. Even if they were not sexually active with men, their gender identity was often enough to classify them as deviants and homosexuals. Others were charged under laws against asocial behaviour, allowing the Gestapo to imprison them without any trial. In concentration camps, trans people faced horrific treatment. Like gay prisoners, trans women were often forced to wear the pink triangle, while trans men might have been labelled as asocial and forced to wear the black triangle. The end of the Second World War in 1945 did not bring justice for homosexual survivors of the Holocaust. Unlike Jewish, Romani, or political prisoners, gay and trans and lesbian survivors were not recognised as victims of Nazi persecution, and many continued to face legal discrimination. West Germany retained paragraph 175, and those who had been imprisoned for homosexuality under Nazi rule often found themselves rearrested and/or denied compensation. In East Germany, the laws were relaxed somewhat, but it was not until 1968 that a significant reform took place. West Germany did not fully repeal paragraph 175 until 1994, nearly 50 years after the fall of the Nazi regime. Many gay Holocaust survivors lived the rest of their lives in silence, fearing further discrimination if they spoke out about their experiences. The struggle for recognition of LGBTQI plus victims of the Holocaust has been long and difficult. For decades, mainstream historical narratives have overlooked or ignored their suffering. It was only in the 1970s and 80s that LGBTQI plus activists began to bring attention to this aspect of Nazi prosecution and persecution. The pink triangle, once a symbol of oppression, was reclaimed as an emblem of gay rights movement worldwide. In 2002, the German government formally apologised for the persecution of LGBTQI plus people under the Nazis, and in 2017, convictions under paragraph 175 were overturned. Memorials have since been erected in cities such as Berlin to honour the LGBTQI plus victims of the Holocaust. And so I bring this quizstory to a close by saying the experiences of gay and LGBTQI plus people during the Holocaust highlight the devastating consequences of state-sponsored homophobia and the dangers of authoritarian regimes that seek to control and suppress marginalised groups. Though their suffering was long overlooked, the recognition of their persecution is an essential part of Holocaust history. Understanding this dark chapter serves as a reminder of the ongoing struggle for LGBTQI plus rights and the importance of resisting discrimination in all of its forms. It feels more important now than ever to talk about the experiences of LGBTQI plus people during a time of immense persecution and torture, to recognise and remember what we have suffered and to reflect on what we have overcome. We have fought to be seen, to be recognised as equals. And although times are incredibly hard right now and can feel quite terrifying, it cannot take away from what we have survived and what we can continue to survive. Although some governments are full of inaccurately fueled vitriol, it is again a cliché distraction technique, and we will always have people standing by our side, just like we did on June 28, 1970, at the Stonewall Uprising, otherwise known as the Stonewall Rebellion and Revolution, the first Pride marches held in New York, LA, and Chicago. Thousands of LGBTQI plus people, led by Marsha P. Johnson, Sylvia Rivera, both powerful black trans women, and Stormé Delevere, a lesbian activist who was brutalised by police officers, it was here that people gathered to commemorate Stonewall and demonstrate for equal rights. And here we still are, standing strong with love. Never stop believing that who you are is valid, and never believe you're alone, because there will always be, as there has always been, people who will stand by your side to help us all have a voice.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Oh, I feel summery already. That's Becky Hill and Galantis.
I wouldn't go that far.
Well, I'm in the music.
You know. Yeah, well, you are going on holiday soon, so maybe that's helping.
Yes.
But not at all. Exciting.
But that's a track called Run, which I really like.
Mm. Yeah, I do, actually. I must say.
You must say, slippery little suckers.
See, now that is truly out of context. I was talking about tofu, listeners, and it is slippery.
Slippery little suckers.
If you don't cook it right, if you don't firm up your tofu, it's floppy.
And it's not tofu. What's the? It's a cheese, isn't it? It's squeaky on your teeth.
Halloumi.
Halloumi.
Squeaky cheese. Yeah.
I'm sorry. It still all reminds me of Miranda, though. It's such fun. Moist.
Bear with. Plinth. I do love a moist plinth. I love it when...
I wish she makes some more. They were so good.
Oh, me too. I love it when her mum says, this week's laugh is in the style of Lady Gaga. Do you remember that? Yes. Poker Lady face. Yes. Lady Gaga. Just such...
Ha ha. Ha
ha ha. Glad you started me off. I love her. Her new book, just quickly put out there, actually, is about her having chronic fatigue, and it's really powerful. I'm taking my time with it because it's very emotional.
Yeah, she was on Michael McIntyre's big show.
Oh, was
the other week. Yeah, they got loads of people from her past.
Oh, I need to
like come
that.
Up through the stage, and they'd say, "Hi, Miranda, do you know who I am?" And it was like her old PE teacher, and all sorts, and some guy who'd rescued her from something, and.
Well, her first book got me through a very difficult time, and I listened to an audio about 10 times that I wrote to her to tell her, and she wrote back.
Oh, did she?
She did.
Oh, how
within,
nice.
Within about an hour.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, was really touched by that because it kept me comfort. Yeah. It kept me company and brought me comfort. I knew what I meant.
What book
was it? It was Miranda Hart's first. She's only had two, I believe, and it was her first book. I don't know the name.
Okay.
Which is silly.
Are you making notes?
I am.
Writing it down, haven't you?
I'm going to read it.
I would actually suggest listening to it because she does her young self and her older self having a conversation.
Ah, okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So she's done the audiobook, has she?
Yeah, and she plays a 14-year-old her. And her having a conversation at boarding school as if they've like time traveled and come together. So she's talking and trying to make her younger self understand that she's going to be all right.
Yeah.
So very it's clever. Called Is It Just Me, by the way.
Okay.
I had a quick Google.
Are you getting commissioned for this?
Yeah. Such fun! No, I'm not. But, you know, I love to read. And you love to read as well, don't you, Tesh?
Now, a few people have been asking, if you want to know who your finalists are for the awards, you'd have to join us next week. When you're going to do it for us, aren't you, Steffi? You're going to have the pleasure of opening the awards.
I hope it's a big enough envelope. It's a lot of names.
I don't mind helping.
It is a lot of names.
I'll be enthused.
Infused.
I will. I'm actually really looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to the awards.
I don't know the results, so.
You won't find the results
until
results,
March.
Tickets will go on sale in March.
Yeah.
So. Although you can get them for free, I should point out.
Is it in April? I should know this.
It is the last Thursday of March. It will be
of March.
It will be happening at the Old Market Assembly, as it always is. I had a lovely meeting with them yesterday. They can't wait. So, and there's a few surprises coming in it too.
Tune in next week, listeners.
Anyway, that's it for this week. As always, a big thank you for joining us all.
And I bet you're all sitting at home on the edge of your seats wanting to know what's up with the awards, but... sorry, you'll have to wait. We love you and everything, but maybe find out next Thursday.
We'll catch you same time, same place next week. From myself, from Terry, from Ayers, from Steph, and the lovely Lisa. Say bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Shout out.
LGBT Radio for you.